treat!
Oh, oh boy. How many do we have here? 1, 2, 4, 8, 12 of you. The good news is I have just enough candy for all of you. Yay! The bad news is all I've left are Necco wafers and pennies. Yay! Take it or leave it, man. That's what I thought. Happy Halloween!
Up yours.
What? Trick or treat. Oh, thank God you're here.
Why, wait, I'm not manning an apple bobbing station outside again. Two different kids lost teeth last year.
No apple bobbing. It's just customer volume. The kids these years, they've far exceeded my projections.
Well, how much candy did you stock up on?
Let me pull up the Excel spreadsheet. Look, here, 2010, 40 kids, 2011, 49 kids, 2012, 56 kids.
Yeah, a steady increase in demand, but nothing abnormal. What's this year's tally?
100...
Jesus!
And 32!
What kind of shit are you handing out, man? King-size candy bars?
The last 3 years, I purposely decreased the quality of product in the hopes it would level off demand and stabilize my supply chain, but for some reason, they keep coming back, and this year it's been in hordes!
Okay, there has to be a way out of this.
Christ, man, what am I gonna do?
Trick or treat!
We've gotta think fast. What's in the box over there?
Nothing. Off limits.
Oh, Tanner, what's in the box?
I'm telling you, dude, don't worry about it.
What's in the fucking box?
Some of my dumbest games. They're my treasures. Off limits.
Trick or treat.
Oh, fuck.
Dude, I know this is hard, but if you don't give these kids something, they're gonna fucking trick you. And kids these days don't just trick like we used to, where we'd steal pumpkins and TP trees. They're into some seriously depraved saw-like shit. They don't care about physical destruction anymore. They want to murder your mind. One kid, his gimmick is to just sit outside your living room window and stare. For days. Day and night. He relies on two things to fuel him. Capri Suns and rage. And it doesn't help that the kid looks like a thin Louis Anderson either. There's no time. Make your move.
Trick or treat!
All right, kids. You came at just the right time. Queue up. One per kid. Nice Chucky costume. For you, I have Dream TV for the SNES. Oh, and what do we have here? A cute bear. Aw. You get Hunter's Trophy to America. Now you can kill yourself.
Aw, man.
Oh, and finally we have Dad in a Walter White Heisenberg costume. What a surprise.
The fuck is this shit?
No, you're right. No one wants to play Amy. Even I didn't want to. So, okay, let's look here. Let me make it up to you. Here, hot off the shelves, a brand new release for a brand new system.
Aw, come on, man. You think I'm some kind of asshole to want a Wii U game? Who even has a Wii U?
You do now. Take the whole fucking system.
Now you're playing with power!
Up top. Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb? Dumb.
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Welcome to another episode of the Super Dumb Games Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Scary.
I am your host, Tanner, the Terrible. Greetings. I'm a butler, a dead butler.
And I am his master.
Do you remember that, though? How great those... terrible local...
Yeah, I think every you know, we had Count Scary is one of them, and then there was another guy, I can't remember his name.
Wasn't the Ghoul? Was that another one that was...
Yeah, the Ghoul, okay. Yeah. Another Detroit. And I always thought that that was kind of a unique thing we had, and then I started learning that basically every major metropolitan area had their own horror host, essentially.
Yeah, you had this expectation as a kid that this is only happening to you. No other kid gets this kind of great treatment watching Phantasm 4, and they really did show some good horror movies back then.
And then, of course, Elvira kind of served the purpose for everybody nationwide in a way. Like, she then became... She was the syndicated horror host for places in, like, Nowheresville, North Dakota. Like, all right, we'll just default to Elvira.
Then it became this nationwide, you just watch Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
With the Crypt Keeper.
I remember my sister had a birthday party, and it was a sleepover. And, of course, there's always a VHS rented for the sleepover.
Of course.
And my sister selected Elvira, one of the Elvira movies.
Oh, God.
And... controversy spread throughout the block as to if, because my mom was always very liberal about that stuff, about sex and violence and all that. Like, she didn't care all that much. The only thing that was ever banned was, you can't do that on television. Because she said it was derogatory towards parents. So it's kind of a selfish. But so she said, okay, well, the Elvira movie's fine. But then my sister's friend's parents caught wind of it. And there was this big debate as to whether Elvira was indeed appropriate. I can't remember the exact age, but I think they eventually capitulated and Elvira was screened and everyone got a good full view of pasty, gorgeous, white cleavage. A bunch of little girls.
Now contrast that with when my dad rented Faces of Death for us. So,
oh my God, that would never have happened in my house. I don't think my parents even were aware that it existed. We had to trade that shit. There was like an underground railroad just for Faces of Death in my neighborhood.
It was like buried under the old stump by old man Griswold's yard. You'd pick it up at 2 a.m.
You'd whistle a certain tune and knock thrice on a stump, and it would, like, you know, a little person would, like, pop up from the stump and hand you.
Yeah, we watched that, and we got to watch somebody undergo a sex change. I think a train hit a person.
Oh, God, that exact video. And that exact moment you just mentioned traumatized me. There were two distinctive traumatizing moments when I was little that, to me, were defining. And this is another thing, people! Kids need to be scared. It's productive.
It is.
And both seeing that person get hit by a train and killed, and the other traumatizing moment, which was when people during Desert Storm, we had POWs and they released videos of the POWs in Iraq having been beaten up and everything. Those two moments, you know, people worry about kids seeing that shit because it's going to affect them and make them violent. It had the precise opposite effect. It made me abhor violence in a way and fear death. It had a positive, productive effect on me.
I agree. The only other thing that was worse for me was seeing Garbage Pail Kids the movie in theaters.
Oh my God, which we watched, what was it, 2 years ago at Christmas?
Yeah.
Spirits were high when it started. And by the end, I was ready to kill myself and everyone else.
There was no purpose to life anymore, and I don't even know why we soldiered through it, honestly. There was no... At any point, we could have erased that VHS if we wanted to. There was no reason.
We were punishing ourselves like Jesus did to himself on the cross. It was a deeply religious experience.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is your 7th episode, I believe, if I'm counting correctly.
Oh, shit, I thought this was 6.
I think we're on 7, but maybe we should check with the archives.
I swear we had the same conversation in the last... this is 7.
Jesus Christ. Time's flying, you know, it's like at 1 minute you're in kindergarten, next second you're all grown up, you know?
1 second you're on the street corner selling papers. The next year, editor of the newspaper.
Oh, shit. So this week, I once again, what a dereliction of duty this was. I just didn't play a single game.
No koala carts this week.
No, I've decided to abstain from koala carts for the time being. Look, it's nice to be at the top of the leader pack, but I need to give another kid a chance. I think I was actually dragging down the entirety of the second to fourth grade public school system across the country.
The koala carts developers had to hold an emergency meeting to decide what to do with this super dominant player.
That's right. So no koala carts for me. I just, I had other shit to do. Look, I know we're a gaming podcast. I think I said this in like episode two or three, but I've got a very busy schedule, people. My dance card is full, and now you want me to play video games on top of it? I don't think so, all right?
What do you want from me? You asked us to do this podcast.
Yeah, you hoisted this upon our shoulders, and goddammit, we're bearing this cross for you. But fuck, man, just give me a break every so often, please.
Well, I did indeed play a game last night, in fact.
Oh, no. Was it?
And, oh, Jesus Christ, people. So this game's called Amy. It's a survival horror slash stealth game. Two of my least favorite genres. Two horrible tastes that taste like shit sandwiches together. And then on top of it, so they take those two painstaking genres, and then what do they throw into it? An escort mission that never ends.
Oh my God.
It's designed to torture you. It's a Saw-like device for players. One of the lowest rated games of the past few years. It came out in January 2012 to 0.0 scant at best fanfare. Developed by a couple French dudes. Well, one French dude, Paul Cuisset or something. He was the director of the game, and he's gone on to make such hits as Flashback, which was a disaster.
Whoa. Wait, the game for like Super Nintendo and Genesis?
No, this was a newer version.
Oh, okay.
And then they're rumored to be making Jesus Christ Superstar.
Like the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical?
Yes.
They're translating it into...
Yes.
Why would you do that?
So this game, I was planning on doing an extreme of this game. The first video I recorded didn't record. That already started the night off horribly. The second video I recorded, I forgot to turn my mic on. And by the end of this second video, though, you know, I've been giving you a lot of shit for quitting games.
Now you know.
I can't do it, people. I can't. I was trying. This game isn't dumb. This game is horrible. It's so empty. It's so anti-enjoyable. There's nothing to hang enjoyment on in this game. There's nothing even funny about it. It's just terrible. And every measure you could possibly... Everything you can do wrong and any opportunity to do something right, it's not doing. Ugh. It's, oh my God.
Okay, so what's the story? We've got a gal named Amy, right? Or some...
I only played a couple hours, maybe max.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, you're a mom and you have an autistic daughter who can't speak, and you're on a train, the train crashes, and then zombies appear.
And then you're just on an escort mission for the next 9 hours?
Yes.
Oh God, yeah. No way.
And I wasn't scared in the very least. There was no creepiness. I didn't get any jump scares. And that's, in a survival horror game, that kind of keeps you going in a way. You get fueled by that stuff.
Sure.
They're completely incapable of executing on any of that type of stuff. Everything technically is done really poorly. The camera, you feel like it's a claustrophobic camera that's right up on the back of the character. You've got no view of anything. The controls are really inaccurate in a way. The motion capture and the speech, the vocal performances, the sound design is off. The weird sounds happen. The combat is terrible. There's nothing! Nothing here!
Well, I hear all of that you're saying, but I'm on the Amy Facebook page, and...
I want to be there on the day they launch that page with anticipation.
It hasn't been updated in a while, but there's been some comments. The most recent comment was August 22nd, which was Prince Persia demanding, PC, please!
Because I love that he sees that it has a 33 Metacritic score, and he's just dying to play it. Like,
well, there's more people, and this one I think comes from, I think, what I would consider to be a trusted source. This comes from Gerardo Bloomerfield. He says, "I am a gamer and a horror writer with 9 books published, and this is my favorite survival horror game.
Oh my God.
I don't understand the reviews and critics from specialized magazines. I just can say, ignore them. All the people I know like the game. It has 4 stars at the PSN, PlayStation Network, and some of us consider it a masterpiece. I really want a sequel. The script is original, the gameplay is innovative, and it is a very scary game. More than any other survival horror in the market right now. Keep the good work. Sincerely, Gerardo Bloomerfield, horror books writer, gamer."
Guy who has never played a video game. But he's from a blast from the past style world in which he just emerged from a basement, found out there was this thing called video games, popped this one in, and it blew his fucking mind. You know, like,
I just want to say too, he posted a picture beneath it. I don't know if this is a profile picture. I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know how this works. But he posted a picture of what looks to me to be like Final Fight being played on Neo Geo X, like the handheld Neo Geo. So this guy knows his shit, is what I'm trying to say. Horror books writer, gamer, plays Neo Geo.
So we've been trying to articulate this since the beginning of this podcast, that what this podcast and show are really about is dumbness. And I think this game, more so than any game I've experienced so far, is a really great example of how a really bad game lacks dumb shit to keep you entertained.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for those games like Hunter's Trophy that are bad, but they're so dumb they're charming, and that makes me want to play it more.
Right, and in this game,
nothing's there for me. I refuse to post a video about it because I don't think it's interesting. It's just terrible.
That's a scathing review. Non-endorsement from us. No endorsement.
It's complete incompetence. And I can't believe someone gave them money to make another game and then another game after that game. It's the Uwe Boll of developers.
Especially given that we know at least the premise for one of those games. Like, it's already set up for failure. When's the last time you turned to somebody and go, dude, you know Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? You know, he's probably one of the all-time greats in the theater world. And God, wouldn't it be great if they just did a Jesus Christ Superstar video game, like port that thing straight to consoles, PC, put an online component. I will be playing with other people. Jesus Christ Superstar for the PC. Let's buy it.
Massively multiplayer online Jesus Christ. A 1,000 Jesuses killing rats.
Killing rats. And going on escort missions. So, is that it on Amy? That's the end of it.
Don't ever play it. Don't get anywhere near it. Don't think it's going to be funny, because it's not. Just avoid at all costs. I don't know if you knew this, but the extensive, crack, much lauded Super Dumb Games news team has been hard at work on a customer satisfaction survey just to determine, you know, what's working, what's not with the show.
Sure.
You wouldn't believe what they found out this week. What's Droppin's a fan favorite?
That came from all of their polling and a census taking. Okay, all right.
It was clear. What's Droppin's a fan favorite, people? First up, Just Dance Kids 2014. We were all waiting for it. It is out last week. October 22nd. We've all already bought it. I'm just telling you shit you already know. We connect PS3. They're going all across the board with this hit. Chris, I got a question for you. if you were going to make a Just Dance kids game, what tracks do you think need to be included? Let's see if you can get any of the top 38 killer hot tracks on this hit.
I got to channel my inner kids bop right now. So I'm...
yes, it's definitely the Just Dance kids website is a thing to behold, and it is kids bopped up. There's a kid in a cowboy outfit. There's a kid with a scarf dancing in a sci-fi landscape.
Okay, so first off, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine that they somehow want to have current music, okay?
You'd think so, but I don't think any of these songs, of course, I don't know a lot of these songs, but from looking at them, I think these songs are all at least a year old. There are some pop hits, though.
Because, okay, two people who came straight to mind, two female performers. Well, a third actually just came to mind, but I'll say the first one, I said Lady Gaga's got to be on there.
No!
No!
You got to also remember that this has to be appropriate.
Oh, I guess that's true.
I'm assuming this is targeted around age 9.
So then, this shows you that I do not have my finger on the pulse of these kids. I was going to say, too, like Katy Perry.
You know what? That would be a really great guess. I don't think they could afford her. Because her music, I mean, that's right in the wheelhouse of this. She is not on this list.
All right.
Let's see if you can just get one.
God.
What do the kids love nowadays?
What do they love now? They love Bieber, Justin Bieber.
Yes!
He's on there.
He's on there. A song called Love Me. Have no idea what that is.
It's him imploring people to please God love him.
It's just him sitting with a microphone just crying softly. Like.
I'm going to go with A Blast from the Past.
There are a few of those. So.
Because I think that this is one that pops up. So I'm even going to try to guess the song. I'm going to go with Ricky Martin, Livin' La Vida Loca.
You know what? You should be in charge of the music for the next Just Dance Kids. Another great choice, not on here.
How is that not on the list?
I know. I bet it was on 2013.
Because then my next guess is after that, it goes into like George Michael and Culture Club and stuff like that. So
George Michael, father figure. I want to see kids dancing, father figure. So the list is made up of crap like Michael Bublé, Feeling Good, Bruno Mars, of course.
Oh, I forgot Bruno Mars.
The Jonas Brothers.
What about like Rihanna? That's a name I know.
No, she's too raw.
Damn. Well, wait. People like they like One Direction. I see girls on like they post videos where girls go apeshit over One Direction.
They do. They do like them, but once again, I don't think Just Dance can afford One Direction.
Why am I not in the brainstorming room when this is going on? Because clearly I know what needs to be on this list. Can we get, like, who did the Ghostbusters theme? Can we get...
Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr. Kids will fucking dance to Ghostbusters if you throw that on. Guaranteed.
I'll tell you what they won't dance to. Is the pile of shit that rounds up this list that they clearly threw in there because I imagine it's low cost or no cost, which is like, and I can't, stupid crap like Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, Itsy Bitsy Spider. If my kid wanted to dance that, I'd slap them. Like, listen to something real. Like, here's Megadeth. Yeah. Try to dance to this. This is a challenge.
Shit. I was expecting that they were going to try to pull the angle of, you know, kids dancing to current pop music, but not... I wasn't even in the headspace of, okay, today we're going to be doing nursery rhymes turned song or whatever, old McDonald or some shit like that.
I mean, parents of little kids, they need a means with which to, like, plop that bag of meat down in front of the TV and go off and, you know...
And fuck.
Do some math. Or both at the same time. So it's like, they need some of that really young age crap. All right, so fuck that game. We've got an update to a game I believe I reported on, maybe not. But Euro Truck Simulator 2, did we cover that?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a game we would have covered.
I thought so. No, maybe we did. Oh, fuck, so, I don't remember.
They're all the same. So Euro Truck Simulator 2, October 24th, all you Euro Truck fans, your world was shaken to the core when the Halloween Paint Jobs pack got released
on Steam.
There is nothing sweeter than this. So these are basically wrap decals that just make your truck look sick!
With this game, are you playing with anyone else? Does anyone else see this except for you?
I think it's only you, but God, it's worth it.
Oh my God, is that amazing. I love that dedication.
If you had to create a Halloween decal for your truck, what would you put on it?
I would like to have... Do I go like full-on horror, disgusting, gore kind of thing? Or do I go with like the old Halloween decorations where it's like... You know, just a crazy cat on the moon that's all, you know, creepy looking. I would probably put, like, a witch on a broomstick because that shows people on fast. And then I would put a jack-o'-lantern missing some teeth because if I'm a truck driver, I got a few gaps in my teeth. I'm trying to really show people who I am on the inside. I'm fast. I'm missing teeth.
There's a jack-o'-lantern decal, so you would be satisfied. It looks like basically they make the entire cab into a giant pumpkin, and then they put some little jack-o'-lanterns around there.
They're missing the number one thing, which is I want the front of my truck to have the goblin front end from Maximum Overdrive. Is that possible?
I don't recall. Was Emilio Estevez in that?
Yeah, it was the Stephen King movie where the truck. Well, it was more than just trucks. It was all
everything
devices.
Came to life, yeah.
Yeah, like people are getting run over by lawnmowers, but then they're all stuck in this diner / gas station, like a truck stop, and then they have to like outwit this truck with a demon face on it. That's what I want on the front of my truck.
Well, you're not going to get that with Euro Truck.
God damn it!
You've got a grand total of 6 choices.
What the fuck? Why even put in the effort, Euro Truck designers?
Listen... It's a small team! So you got your pumpkin. You've got, of course, your crying wolf with a giant moon.
Ooh.
Because, you know, the Venn diagram of truck lovers and wolf lovers.
Of course.
Like, it's a fucking circle, people.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no outlier. Part of becoming a truck driver is just learning about wolves. Like mating habits.
Right. And owning at least 2 3 moon night. Sort of shirts, you know, where the wolves are howling at the moon in 3 different sort of.
And then you got, this one's kind of curious to me because this is not Halloween in any way. And I'm trying to look up the graphic for it, but it's called Fallen Angel.
Is it like a tattoo kind of design looking thing? Like some trashy people get that Fallen Angel tattoo design?
What does that even look like? I don't even know what that would be.
Well, usually it looks like shit. On every, I don't know. I think it's in my mind when I hear about it, it's kind of like a specter of some sort that's kind of floating, and they've got angel wings.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
You know, the angel wings indicate like that there's good in me, but then you can tell by how downtrodden this specter looks, how dopey it looks. That you know, that I dabble in the macabre every so often.
Yeah, when you're drinking some Old English in a Garfield nightshirt. at 10 a.m. in the morning, and you're explaining that tattoo to a man, I think it really impresses him. So then we also have Spiderweb, Flaming Dragon, not Halloween again, Euro Truck Simulator. Maybe in Europe, motherfucker. Not in the U.S. Dragons do not mean Halloween, and then a Grim Reaper.
Oh, the Grim Reaper. I should have thought about that. Huh.
Yeah. So that's Euro Truck Paint Jobs. Oh, pick those up. There's not much time left, people. Top Sizzlers! This is actually a kind of real story.
Okay.
Pour one out for the Weeb, because Wii production has ended in Japan.
Oh, shit. Well...
An end of an era, a very strange era, I think, in games.
I can hear someone faintly playing taps in the background.
How many Wiis do you think were sold?
To me, 0.
To me, 1, and then I resold it, and then he resold it.
You know, I always have a hard time with how many units are actually sold of any gaming system.
Well, so let me help you out.
Okay.
The Wii U has sold 3.6 million units.
That doesn't sound like a hell of a lot.
It's fucking terrible.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the Wii, though, okay, but the Wii came out, if I'm remembering correctly, that came out, it was like at the same time or around the same time as Xbox 360 and the PS3, or maybe slightly before them.
Yeah, a little bit before, I think.
And I imagine that it was because, what was it the successor to? Was it
GameCube.
GameCube. Okay, and the GameCube was highly successful. I love the GameCube.
It was I wouldn't say highly successful. It was kind of a non-starter in a way, but it was more successful than the Wii U is right now.
Right. Well, I think it's maybe what I was thinking is the GameCube, I think, is beloved to many. It's got its like core fan base that will never let it die. I'm just going to go with a round number. I'm going to say 100 million units. What? No.
Exactly.
No, but it's a round number.
This is why I keep asking these questions, because in some fucking weird way, you've got like this. Prescience. Omniscience that.
I just.
Yeah, so it sold 100 million of those things.
Those are true Iron Man numbers. That is incredible. I pulled it out of my ass because I just figured, given the longevity of the system, the fact that I'm sure some people balked at the Wii U and just to spit on the Wii U said, fuck you, I'm buying the Wii instead.
To date, it has still sold more than the PS3 and 360. It was the console winner.
See, and if you would have asked me what the other two sold, I would have highballed it, because I would have said that the other two were like, I don't know, 150 million apiece. So,
no.
Wow.
Yeah, and they sold 872 million pieces of software for the Wii.
Holy shit.
It's incredible. It sucks. Like, it might be the first time in console history that a console sucked and won the console generation.
Here's another fun fact. I can't name a single game. Like, I think I know that there was a Wii Fit, because that's what schlub
huge.
Got.
It was huge, too. And it was pointless. You just stood on a piece of plastic.
It was like doing step aerobics in junior high gym.
But worse, it was just a piece of barely raised off the ground plastic that had pressure set. It was nothing.
What was the piece de resistance? What was the game above all games that came out? Because I can't name it. I don't know what.
It was Mario Kart, which sold 34 million units.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess I was going to guess it would be like a Zelda or some kind of Metroid if it came out for the. I don't even know. Did a Metroid even get released for the Wii? Or
They released Metroid Prime, and the Zelda Twilight Princess sucked.
Oh, okay. Man.
Anyway, big story, because the Wii is fading away.
It's dead.
Next story in Ellen Page news.
Oh, God. I let it slide last week because it was slightly relevant, but this is getting absurd.
Yeah, so this is this week's Ellen Page story. This is actually 10 days old, I think, or over 10 days old, but I just discovered it. And this is, you know, we do dumb video game news. This is dumb video game player news.
Okay.
So apparently, you know, Beyond Two Souls comes out, and because David Cage, the guy who makes those games, is a fucking creep, he always includes in his games a really long shower sequence with the female protagonist.
That's his trademark.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I guess this game, like Heavy Rain, has one. And it's discreet. I mean, certainly it's objectifying and sexist, because there's no point to it other than the erotic sensation. But it was discreet in that there was no nudity or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, enterprising perverts and neckbeards quickly got their hands on a debugged PS3. These are the versions the console sent out to usually reviewers to get pre-release versions and that kind of thing. And they're usually have ways to tweak the game and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So some people got a hold of this game and instantly hacked and modified the shower sequence to expose Ellen Page's nude body.
Oh, my God. They're just looking for any excuse to milk that eel.
Oh, just milk it. It's like, it took me a long time to just wrap my head around this. Like, first of all, this compulsion. And secondly, the way this story's been circulating is, and this is all, I think, for clickbait, is like, Ellen Page nude.
Mm-hmm.
It's not her body, it's pixels! This is polygons!
Yeah, how many polygons are we talking here?
It's like, how is this exciting? I mean, I understand, you know, for hilarity purposes, like in a game where you're controlling the character and it's multiplayer or whatever, you just want to get naked and run around just for the fuck of it.
Yeah, like in Second Life when I bought a dick and ran around jizzing on people.
A dick with like three different settings of hardness.
Yeah.
Which I don't know that you ever quite figured out how to operate that thing.
Of course not. But a friend of ours and I, when we revisited Second Life, somebody else had mastered it. So all I had to do was point and click. And then I was able to manipulate their penis.
Anyway, this is just peculiar to me that this is even a thing. I think they've been trying to take down all the videos and everything. And Ellen Page, I believe, even had to comment on this.
Oh, God. That it even comes into her life is really odd.
I know. Like, you know, she made this little gesture to game culture, and now she's probably been ruined forever.
I think, too, the issue is, and I'm being totally candid here, I've never been attracted to a cartoon or a gaming character. I mean, I watched Heavy Metal back in the day, okay? Every kid did, because there was a chick riding a dragon and her tits were hanging out, but it was animated. But I never, that wasn't for me. So I guess it's, I mean, this is all just, it boils down to some kind of a cartoon fetishism that I don't have, so.
And it's also, I feel like video game players, they just want to, like, break stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they just want to figure crap out and...
You know, now that I was just reflecting on games where there was a fuck mechanism within the game, when I was Kratos in whichever game that was where you can get into bed with a gal, I fucked...
The answer is every game.
I fucked like a beast, man, when I was in that game.
Yeah, I think, like, it's almost like you just, well, I just gotta press this button, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, you got some rewards, and he would thrust, and then, you know...
It's so weird that that was even a mechanic. What? Think about having to sit in a meeting and make that happen,
yeah,
and then have to program that and model it.
Listen up! Before Kratos encounters the Minotaurs, I think we need a fuck scene. Who's with me?
And then they have to, like... Let's just spitball this here. What would this fuck scene look like? Well, I think this could be a quick time event. Oh, God. Okay, fuck that. Last segment, hot off the wire. One of the more bizarre stories that I've come across. Personal Neuro Devices Incorporated, a developer of mobile neuro applications, has launched Neuronauts, the first ever mobile multiplayer game powered by neurofeedback. What the fuck?
This is like some William Gibson shit. I don't like this. I don't like the direction this is going.
Jack in, space cowboy!
To what end will this take humanity? That's my question. Where do we draw the line?
Not very far. If you look up this game, it looks like one of those kid games that's on, you know, a Tabio E2 type tablet.
Right.
You know, that some high as hell programmer just shit together in a late night.
Right.
You know, so it's the most rudimentary game you could ever imagine. But apparently there's this device you put on your head that reportedly, and I don't, you know, this has all the science of a Floby, but you put it on your head and you then control in some way the movement of the spaceships, the tilt with your brain waves.
I don't give a shit. This is so stupid. It's so dumb.
It's so awful. And what I've been noticing now that I've been going over the PR Newswire is you have all these companies like Personal Neuro Devices that are just trying to make their way in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And the only outlet they have to get any press is submitting a release to the PR Newswire. Because when they release this game, no one cares.
Right.
No one wants it. But so, like, I imagine they pop the champagne when this press release shows up. You know, like, this is the one thing. This is their moment in time.
I have no other comments for this game. It's dumb.
Depending on the cost of the headset, this might be worth doing some coverage of, though.
Okay. All right. Well, if anyone at, what's the name of the company again? Cyber Genetic Core. What are they called?
Kawada Industries, like some cyborg Japanese company from the future. It's, I think they're called Personal Neuro Devices.
All right.
Wait, here. I'm looking up the cost. Oh, fuck. It's $100.
I can afford that. Well, here's what I'll say. People over at Cryodyne Industries, whatever you're called, have your people get with our people. Send over a few beta copies so that Tanner and I can try them out. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, because listen, other than us, your story's not getting picked up anywhere.
That's right.
We're going to give you the coverage you need, goddammit. Anyway, that... yeah, that's your news.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our final segment of the show. This is the time when we enjoy playing games with one another. Not the usual...
Mind games!
Yeah. I like to fuck with Tanner's brain, send him into a depressing spiral. No, this is our game segment. Like, when we actually play a game for the audience, for their enjoyment. In the past, there's been a few games that we played. I can't... What games have we played before? I don't even remember. I guess it doesn't matter. Today's game, it has a name. It's called, Guess the Game, you goo-potted prick purse.
Easy to remember. This is a game listeners can play along with.
Absolutely. The premise is simple. I am going to read four game premises, one of which is an imposter. You have to pick out which one of those four is not the real game. These can span from any era of gaming. And they can belong on any platform. You know, it could be a PC game. It could be as recent as an Xbox 360 game. It could have come out for the Amiga. It could have been on a floppy disk from back in the day.
Could it be on a Nokia N-Gage? Or a Jaguar?
Yeah, sure. Why not? No, I won't be. No. Actually, no. Those are right out. I'm not going to allow those. So it's pretty easy. I'm just going to read a premise, and the game could either be real or it couldn't be. I'm also adding in, at the end, a fun fact that is related to the game.
So even fake games have...
A fun fact. You're absolutely correct.
Fun lies.
The trick is, you know, I can be deceptive. Look, people, I'm a really good writer, so I know what it's like to write premises for games. I write them all the time. We did it in that last brainstorming session that you and I did. We wrote a brilliant game about... What was that game that we did? What was that game
Bloody called? Surgery something.
Simulator, yeah. I think, yeah. And so you guys know that I've got the chops for this sort of thing. So I'm just going to jump right in. Listen for clues, though, because there's certain areas where I may have thrown in, you know, a clue for you to latch onto on whether or not it's a real or a fake game. So our first game. The player takes the role of a chicken who must find his way through bizarre levels full of balloons, telephones, cheese, and other strange elements. While on the ground, the chicken can walk, jump, and peck balloons and ground switches. While in the air, it can dive bomb enemies or springs. Dive bombing enemies will destroy them. Dive bombing springs will bounce the chicken much higher, so it can reach platforms well above its normal jumping capability. If it does not hit an enemy or a spring, the chicken will get stuck in the ground for a short time, which kids find hilarious. To complete a level, players must find and peck all the balloons, of which the last balloon will take players to a boss fight. If you die, though, you start as an egg located at the last balloon pecked. Fun fact.
This game is nonsense!
Fun fact! There was a toll-free number set up after the U.S. release of this game, which would be called to hear the titular character himself give a promotional speech about the game.
I love the description of this game, by the way, where it's as if an autistic person is doing the writing, because it's just describing everything exactly as it is. There's no sense of story or craft. It's just like, Mario runs forward. He then comes upon mushrooms. He can jump and kill mushrooms or jump up and unlock coins. He then proceeds, like great copy. I'm in. Where do I sign up? I want to jump down on springs.
Game number two.
Wait, what was the fun? Oh, the fun fact was toll free.
Yeah, there was a toll free number. So okay. That kind of gives you an idea, maybe even of era, if you're trying to place this game.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. Fake. Yeah. Let's see. Moving on to.
All right, so number one was fake.
Shit. Let's see. Moving on to the next game. Our protagonist belongs to Dr. Gavin, the architect and owner of a futuristic zoo and theme park. On the night before opening day, he leaves the player in charge of all the animals in the park's two mascots, Whoopi the Walrus and his sidekick, Jojo the Raccoon. As soon as Dr. Gavin leaves, the mice will play. The player sees Jojo looking over his plans to ruin opening day and replace the park with Jojo World. Before he can do anything, Jojo knocks out the player with a mallet and takes a teleporter down into the park, bringing Whoopi with him. Now you must rescue Whoopi, free the animals, find the tickets and tokens Jojo has scattered throughout the park, and catch the raccoon, all before Dr. Gavin returns. Fun fact, this game was listed as the 18th best N64 game of all time in Nintendo Power Magazine's 20th anniversary issue, and was also released nearly 14 years ago to the day you are listening to this podcast.
Oh my, there's no way! If that one's real, and that's the 18th best oh my god, what a system. What a disaster of a console. If that game is real, they couldn't even get to number 20. Like,
on to game number 3. This game combined elements of fantasy RPG and horror to become a top-selling hit in both Europe and North America, but strangely not in Japan, where it was...
What? That seems unlikely. Those two genres.
Where it was ill-received by both critics and players.
It invited
players... Listen, I'm just reading you the premise to a game here. It invited players to enter a mysterious abode with a dubious exterior appearance, where upon entry, players discovered not all is as it seems. Introducing a game element by which players take control of multiple NPCs who act as ways to help drive the story and unveil sometimes inaccessible settings, this game was considered by some to be difficult to master, while others lauded it as a masterpiece. It also features an androgynous protagonist in an attempt to encourage broader appeal, something many video games of its era did not do. Fun fact, the year this game was released, it outsold Wing Commander 4, The Price of Freedom, and in one review was even mentioned as a top game along with Chrono Trigger and Twisted Metal, if that helps you place the era that this would have been released.
RPG and fuck. See, that seems like right in Japan's wheelhouse. That's what throws me there. Because they love androgynous characters, they love RPGs, and they love survival horror. You'd think those three things together. And they love difficulty. Like, you're hitting on all the tropes of Japanese design games.
Yet in this case, it just was a swing and a miss for Japan.
Fuck. Could that... that might be the fake one.
Well, let's...
Seems unlikely.
Let's move to number 4, our final game premise. Ivan Iron Man Stewart endorsed this racing game in which up to 4 players compete against each other or the computer around several top-view indoor tracks of increasing difficulty. There were 8 different races, though these 8 tracks were recycled more than once to add up to 99 races altogether that the player could play. The game features an upgrade system that allows users to customize their vehicles. The goal is to reach the end of the season with the most money earned. Fun fact, this is one of the first games where the player could upgrade his or her vehicle by earning points or money, although there is one game that actually predates the game I'm talking about, that and it has a similar upgrade system, and most modern racing games today employ this same feature.
This is tough. This is really tough. Because I can see cases why each would be fake. And I'm settling in on number two and number three, the zoo one and the horror RPG one. Because those two, there was something about the zoo one, I have a hard time believing there are 18 better games than that game on the N64, because it's not ringing a bell to me. Mm-hmm. And I had an N64, but then I had no games for N64. So it's like, it could maybe be the 18th best game, because there were maybe five good games on that system.
And that game, again, fun fact, was released October 31st, 1999, almost 14 years ago to the day.
Holy shit. But then that third one, and my knowledge of gaming is probably leading me astray, because I'm using analytical skills that probably don't serve well in this type of game. Because everything you were describing just doesn't sound like a game that would flop in Japan. It would probably do fairly well, and if anything, flop in the US and Europe.
But strangely, Japan did not receive that game very well.
No.
All right, clock's ticking.
I'm going to trust my analytical skills, and I'm going to choose number three, the horror RPG, as the fake game.
You would be correct. That,
yes!
That is indeed the fake game. I doctored that up, and you latched onto the one thing that I figured would be the tip-off, which is there's no such thing as a fantasy RPG horror game that it does not latch on in Japan. So, again, the fake story was, or the fake premise is the fact that there is no such game that was a top-selling hit in Europe and North America, but not Japan. There is no such game that invited players to enter a mysterious abode with a dubious exterior appearance, whereupon entry players discovered not as all as it seems, and it did not introduce some new, this is the other one, a new game element where you take control of multiple NPCs just so you can see the fucking environment. I made that up. I would never want to play a game that laborious just to check that shit out.
Yeah, now when you read it over, it seems much more obvious. So what was the second game?
Okay, so the game that you were possibly thinking was fake, which is an actually real game, was a game called Rocket, Robot on Wheels. It was an N64 platformer, single player, made by Ubisoft. And that fun fact is true. It was voted the 18th best N64 game of all time by Nintendo Power in their 20th anniversary issue.
What the hell?
It's the story of a doctor who owns a futuristic zoo and theme park. And one of his two mascots goes rogue, knocks the player over the head. And then you've got to go into the zoo world to fight against the one mascot that went rogue and get tickets and tokens and fight JoJo.
I'm trying to look up that list. I can't find it. I've got the Nintendo Power 100 greatest games of all time, but I can't find their N64 list. I would love to see that list and how in the hell that game. It just goes to show, like, wow, what a crappy, like, when I think about the N64, GoldenEye, Banjo-Kazooie, of course, Mario Kart, a lot of people like Smash Brothers, Ocarina of Time. But once you get past that, it starts getting really tough.
You hit on the big ones, because I've got the list in front of me. Number one was Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, of course.
Number two was Mario 64.
Oh, yeah, yeah, classic.
Yeah, yeah. Number three was Mario Kart 64. Then followed by GoldenEye 007,
yep.
Star Fox 64.
No, sucked.
Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
Followed by WWF No Mercy. If
are you kidding
if
me?
If a wrestling game is cresting the top five, you are.
That's insane, yeah.
Jet Force Gemini, Wave Race 64.
No.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yeah.
F-Zero X. This is kind of surprising that this didn't beat out Star Wars Rogue Squadron. I would have thought that was wasn't a bad game. I don't know. I mean, this isn't a list of bad games, but I wouldn't put it at number 12 over WWF No Mercy. Paper Mario.
Yeah, good.
Ogre Battle 64, Person of Lordly Caliber. I've never played it.
Supposed to be good.
Number 15, Super Smash Brothers. Yeah. Number 16, Rayman 2, The Great Escape. Number 17, Mario Golf. And then number 18, Rocket Robot on Wheels.
What?
The only two that couldn't best it in this top 20 were Pokemon Snap and Blast Corps.
Yeah, see, okay. First of all, I recognize every single game on that list except for that game. But when you start getting into Pokemon Snap and Blast Corps, you're starting to scrape the bottom of the barrel. But there's a game missing on that list. There's two games missing on that list. Perfect Dark and Banjo-Kazooie.
Oh, Perfect Dark was a good game, wasn't it?
Way, way better than a lot of those games.
I never played Banjo-Kazooie, so I can't comment.
It was awesome. And it was Conker's Bad Fur Day, I believe, was the follow-up. And it was better than Conker's, I think.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, the other two stories, just quickly, the key to knowing the racing game that I described was knowing who Ivan Iron Man Stewart is. This was a game called Ivan Iron Man Stewart Super Off-Road. Almost all of us played a game similar to this, like if you ever played RC Pro-Am or whatever.
Yeah.
It had the top-down view. Rock and Roll Racing for SNES sort of copied this. And, you know, again, the fun fact is, this is one of the first games where the player could upgrade your vehicle by earning points or money. The first game to actually employ that reward system was an Atari game called Sprint, where one could upgrade their racer using wrenches. I played that game for Atari. But this game came out for the arcade, the Amiga, Atari, Commodore 64. It was on DOS. I mean, you could play this shit on floppy disk, cartridge, compact disk. Came out in 89. Single player, multiplayer. It was actually not a bad game. The first game I read was a game called Alfred Chicken, which was a single player platform game released February 1994 on the Amiga, Amiga CD 32, NES, Game Boy, Super Game Boy, SNES. And again, you know, there was a second fun fact outside of it having a hotline where the titular character, you know, Alfred Chicken, would give you a promotional speech. The game developers, one of the guys actually ran on a local political party ticket under the Alfred Chicken political party, received 18 votes, if I remember correctly, and they then set up a rule against allowing fringe parties to enter the races because he siphoned votes off of actual parties. And he did it, of course, as a, you know, as a marketing ploy, and it was successful. So those are your four stories. You chose correctly, and that'll do it for Guess the Game, you goo-potted prick purse.
So go to www.superdumbgames.com. Bunch of subscribe links on the left-hand side. We got Hunter's Trophy 2 America videos up on the YouTube channel, so check those out.
That's it.
Yeah. See you next week. Dumb games.